great to have you with us here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and it's another Wildlife Wednesday. David Drake and Jamie Nack will be talking about all kinds of things that go on, that are going on this time of year in our state. And I guess we'll probably even go a little bit beyond as we visit with them and talk about, well, birds and the bird populations maybe across the country. We'll zero in a bit on Wisconsin. Some of the news isn't good there, but we've got some other good news as well as we move along today. Always fun having them with us. And here we are on the last day, if I'm not mistaken, of our Wisconsin Public Radio member drive. And the largest source of funding, as you probably know, comes from listeners just like you. And this drive is your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year. You can take that important step when you donate at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And you know, there's one person I don't see enough, and that's Courtney Everett.
Hello, Larry.
It's good to have you with us.
Thank you.
If you don't know, Courtney is a producer and sometime host of Morning Edition.
I'm up at 4 a.m. every day.
That's pretty good.
I mean,
you're showing your commitment to WPR.
Yeah, and after your show, I'll probably take a nap. So there you go.
Well, I tell you what, we've got, I guess there's no denying that
we have a loss of federal. Yes, correct. Federal funding that will be an ongoing challenge, unfortunately, for WPR. But we've been heartened by the incredible response from WPR listeners, people giving for the first time, increasing their support. That's just how we're going to keep WPR strong. So we have to keep that momentum going on this last day of drive with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. I know lots of people enjoy listening to the first Wednesday of the month when we do our outdoor report. Jamie and David or Scott Craven. And we depend on many sources of funding.
In fact, the largest and most reliable piece of funding for WPR comes from you, the listener. Your support makes all the difference. It is the backbone of how things work here. When you give, you keep WPR's independent news, conversations, entertainment on the air for yourself and for everyone. So make your gift now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I'm guessing WPR is personally important to you, and it's probably also important to you that everybody in the state has access to this high-quality information and entertainment.
So become a member with a contribution of, say, $10 a month, maybe $100 a month, and you're not only going to do something good for yourself, you're doing something good for the whole community. WPR is listener-supported. That's why your participation is so important. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
For me, it's really a sense of a connection to the world and the world of ideas. It keeps me informed. It keeps me thinking. I can't remember the number of times that I've had conversations with people saying, oh, I heard something this morning on Wisconsin Public Radio or National Public Radio. And then it's a way of having a very interesting discussion with other people about some of those ideas. And so I think that it keeps me informed and it keeps me thinking and is a way of engaging other people in important ideas. This is David Corey from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for information in the arts, culture, politics, and the world.
And you can become a part of all of this by giving at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Courtney Everett. This is the member drive, last day of it. Listener support's the biggest source of our funding. And that's why your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, really does have an important impact.
Giving to WPR is so easy. All it takes is just a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount. And again, like Larry said, maybe that's $10 a month for you.
And that donation comes back to you every day in the form of great programs. Show your support at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
And you might be wondering, how much should I give? That's entirely up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into programs that keep you informed just like Larry's show, because we're going to be talking about wildlife, which I'm very excited to be in studio for.
It's one of our most popular programs. Make your gift right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thanks for making an investment that really serves your whole community.
And our goal today is to unlock $10,000 from current members. This is so important. It's set to make sure we have the funding for high-quality programs. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can ask for the WPR window cling today. It features our WPR logo and tells you everything, tells everybody, I guess, that you're a proud supporter.
Oh,
I've got mine sticking on the window of my front door.
Oh,
that
well,
way people
it's the official Larry Mueller house.
When they come to the house,
they know it's you.
Well, they know it's W. I'm a WPR supporter. That's for darn sure. Oh, gosh.
And if you're not a sustainer, you can become one right now. It is so easy to set up, and you'll make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account, credit card, whatever you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to provide reliable support for the programs you love, like Larry.
Muriel in Matthews, North Carolina, says, I went to visit a friend in Milwaukee and they had WPR playing, and I loved it, and now I'm hooked.
I love that.
I love that, too. I think it's great. And well, North Carolina, we get calls. I don't know if we've had any. I don't know if Muriel's ever called.
Well, Muriel should.
We've had calls New Zealand, Germany, all over the United States.
That's so probably just on your show.
Why not North Carolina?
Yeah.
What about you? Where are you living? Wherever you live, this would be a good time to give. It's very powerful, really makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you very much for that. As we turn our attention to the world of wildlife, David Drake, Extension Wildlife Specialist and Professor. David, good to see you.
Good to see you as well, Larry.
And Jamie Knack, Extension Senior Wildlife Outreach Specialist. Jamie, it's great to see you as well.
Wonderful to be back. Thanks, Larry.
We have a lot. You know, here we are. It's kind of a spring-like day out there now. And it won't be long before lots of things are popping up. But in the world of wildlife, when it comes to coyotes, there's plenty going on right now, isn't
there's
there?
A lot going on, and it does feel spring-like, but I know we're going to get our hearts broken.
Not for a few days.
Not for a few days, but it's coming. So we want to just talk a little bit about coyotes. We call them coyotes. You can call them coyotes. Either term is appropriate. We are getting a lot of calls and emails from people across the state, but in particular in urban areas like Mequon and Racine and here in Madison, about people seeing coyotes more frequently than they usually do. And we want to just take a few minutes to talk a little bit about that. Part of that reason you're seeing coyotes right now is that they just completed their breeding season. So they typically breed from December to February. They'll now start moving into pup rearing season here over the next 3 months or so. And when they are breeding, they are typically more active than they are other times of the year. So they are, the more active they are, the more opportunity they have to be seen. But the other thing that coincides with is that that is also the time of the year when we have the least amount of vegetation on trees and shrubs.
Yeah,
so you've
it's
got
easier
much better,
to see.
Easier to see them for sure. So we just want to say that just because you're seeing coyotes does not mean that they are a problem that you need to be afraid of them. Even if you're seeing them during the day, which is a little unusual most of the time, especially in urban areas, coyotes are more nocturnal, so more active at night than they are during the daytime. But when they're breeding and when they're more active, their behavioral patterns, activity patterns can shift a little bit to be more during the daytime. So as long as the coyote sees you and it moves away from you when it sees you, that's exactly what we want them to be doing. If the coyote is not moving away from you, especially during the daytime, we would encourage you to haze them. And there's a short YouTube video if you want to just go Google how to haze a coyote in Madison. That 3.5 minute or so video should pop up. It explains what hazing is all about, how to do it, when not to do it, things of that nature. But generally, we just want to let people know that even though you're seeing coyotes, and especially if you're seeing them during the day, as long as the coyote's not being aggressive or toward you, your kids, your pets, there's not anything really to be concerned about.
All right. Well, that's good news.
I can tag on to that. The second question is usually related to, you know, I saw a coyote
Yeah.
I was walking my dog. It seemed rather bold or
interested in the dog.
Curious with the dog. Yep. You know, what should I do? And so some of the things, if you encounter a coyote that is either continuing to walk towards you or standing its ground, you do want to kind of shout, yell at it, try to scare that coyote away. You don't want to start feeding it and habituating it to people or have a positive encounter. You want that to be something that continues to elicit a fear or concern of humans in that coyote. So some things you can do if you're wearing a jacket, you can open up your jacket and kind of make yourself look bigger. You can put your hands over your head, kind of wave your arms. If there's something nearby that you could throw in the coyote's direction to startle it, and then maintain eye contact and slowly kind of back away out of that situation. If it seems, more aggressive or doesn't exhibit normal behavior and leave, that's probably an animal that's worth at least reporting to officials that you had that situation
experience or
that occurrence.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just one last thing really quick. So as Jamie says, they are more curious in your dog than they are in you. So make sure you keep your dog under control. So on leash, or if it's a smaller breed, pick the dog up in your arms. And last thing, if the coyote is aggressive at all, do not hesitate to call 911.
All right. Penny in Winona County, Minnesota is turning our attention away from coyotes for a minute to look at another animal. Hi, Penny.
Yeah, hi, Larry. So I'm curious about a little critter that I never knew and happened to see last summer. I was out in my yard, rural property by farmland, and I saw what I thought was a chipmunk. So I, wandered over to take a look at it, and I see it stops, and I'm going, making little, chipmunk noises, and it runs towards me, and it's a miniature, like, tiniest little weasel I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was chipmunk-sized. And as I'm making these noises, it's coming within, like, a foot or two of me, and we're both just staring at each other, and then it ran off, but I was like, and I think they said it was a leased weasel, so I'm curious about, what sort of burrows they live in, and, because I haven't seen it since. It did run towards our one little garage, but I've been keeping my eyes out.
Well, that's a great, great description. I think that helps us, kind of confirm that sighting. But in Minnesota, Wisconsin, there are three specific weasels. There are other members of the weasel family, but there are leased weasels, short-tailed weasels, which sometimes are referred to as ermine, and then also long-tailed weasels. And it gets a little complicated in telling short and long-tailed weasels apart. We're looking at the length of the tail and some other distinguishing factors. But the leased weasel is the smallest of the three. It's actually the smallest carnivore that we have in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Does turn white in the winter, as all three of those species do. The difference in the wintertime is a little easier to tell because both the short-tail and the long-tail weasel will have a black tip of fur on their tail. And with the leased weasel, they may have just a hair or two that is black, but very little black on that tip. So easier in the winter to tell for sure that it's a leased weasel, but otherwise size in general is a good indicator of that leased weasel. You making those chipmunk noises probably sounded like prey or mouse-like. And so squeaking or using the back of your hand and making some squeaking noises with your lips can really, I can see where a curious weasel would be, coming to see what that noise was. So voracious eaters, in terms of their habitat, they really need cover because that's where they need to avoid being predated, but also where they're hunting for small mammals and invertebrates and things like that. So.
Very cool. Three weasels, and the least of them is called the least. The smallest of
Very appropriate.
Very appropriate. And you know what? It's very appropriate to have Courtney Everett with me here in the studio. She's a weasel expert.
I'm not. Thanks, though.
I thought you were the one that told me about how to tell the difference between the weasels. Oh, all right.
Well, I wish I knew that, but I will learn from your fabulous guests.
I know. I learn a whole lot on these programs, and I bet you do as well as you're listening into us talk here. And we're in our drive, and we're the last. It's today we need to raise some money that pays for the programs you enjoy. Programs like this one. So I hope you'll support the people like you who are interested in the funding and keeping the funding going for WPR programs. Your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Very important. And we have a challenge.
We do. When you and 299 of your fellow listeners make a gift for the programs you count on, that will help secure $10,000 for WPR from a very, very generous group of donors.
Well, I hope they tell us how many have already contributed, because I can't see it on my... We'll find out. We'll find out. Somebody will tell us how many we have to go here.
There is 200 gifts in the door already.
Oh, okay. So we could maybe get the 100 this hour or the next hour?
Oh, I have faith in that, Larry. Yeah, definitely.
Let's give that a shot. And the challenge, by the way, it's kind of there... These folks who have contributed the money, it's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting the programs that inform and inspire you in the entire state.
Your participation now is so vital. You can help meet this challenge before the end of today. And it starts with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listening to David and Jamie, they've been guests on this show for a long, long time, and I always learn something. We started with coyotes, and we got to weasels, and I'm sure we're going to go to fox, and we're going to talk about all kinds of other things, and we already had a nice call today. And
with some sound effects.
With some sound squeaking. Come here. Oh my goodness me. It's a great time to be here at Wisconsin Public Radio, where you can learn and have fun at the same time, right, Gordon?
Yeah, definitely. And more than 27,000 WPR members are proud sustainers. That means they make ongoing monthly gifts to Wisconsin Public Radio.
And you, too, can provide a reliable stream of funding for the programs you care about. Become a sustainer right now. You just choose an amount, maybe 10 or 20 bucks a month, and set it up to be ongoing. It's easy to do at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Show your support for WPR wherever you go. Ask for the new WPR window cleaner for your gift of any amount. It features WPR's logo and can be placed anywhere you want.
A transparent window cling.
The Wisconsin Public Radio logo underneath. Proud supporter at top.
We've had window clings in the past, and I'm glad that we got a revamp of this one. So if you already have one, it's a new design for the window cling.
It would also be really nice for, like, my apartment window.
This would go in my car.
Anywhere that has a window.
Give now any amount. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Larry Mueller here with Courtney Everett. Your support during our drive makes this program and all of the programs that you enjoy on WPR possible. Your gift, 10, 20 bucks a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount.
People of Wisconsin have access to independent news, meaningful conversations like we're hearing right now on Larry Mueller's show, or, of course, Morning Edition. And it's because tens of thousands of individuals and households choose to support WPR.
And we work on the honor system around here. You can join this team effort with your gift right now, and you pick the amount, $10 a month maybe. You decide the amount and then make your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we were searching for 300 gifts for today to unlock an additional $10,000 from generous donors. We already have 200 gifts in the door, Larry. It's incredible, the support. But we still need more support because this goal is so important. It is set to make sure we have the funding we need for the programs you rely on. And you can give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we'll send you one of those window clings. I've still got the old window cling up on my front door of my house. I think I'll put the new one right next to it.
Yeah, have
what
a little collection going. I love it.
A little collection.
Yeah.
You can have a collection, too, or you can start your collection with actually any amount. We'll send you any contribution. We'll send you one of those window clings. Ask for yours when you make any gift right now at WPR.org or at 888 202-2552.
And if you're a sustaining member, thank you. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Aaron in Shorewood says, I greatly appreciate the high quality of news coverage and the variety of programming. What about you? Do you appreciate the programs you enjoy? Give your gift right now. So important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and thank you. Taking a look at the world of wildlife today with David Drake and Jamie Nacht. Always great to have them stop by. And if you have a question or maybe you got an experience to share with wildlife, the outdoors, I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. You know, yesterday we were talking, I think it was yesterday, we were somehow eagles came up, and there was some talk about what's the difference, how do you tell a golden eagle from a bald eagle in flight? And so we wrapped them back and forth with that. And then Chris in La Crosse had sent an email, and he says that the difference between a golden and a bald eagle in flight is that in flight, a bald eagle head and tail have approximately equal projection away from their body, but a golden eagle's head is much shorter in relation to its tail when they are in flight. And I mean, if that's true, David, that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. The issue is when you are trying to see one bird, you only have one bird to compare to, and you're trying to figure out the proportion, it can get a little confusing. So typically what it is, we do have both bald and golden eagles here in the state of Wisconsin. Typically, golden eagles are more in the western part of our state, whereas bald eagles are throughout the entire state. And as a matter of fact, I think that there's bald eagles breeding. They have breeding territories in every single county in the state of Wisconsin. It gets a little more confusing. You know, if we have adult bald eagles, you have that white head and that white tail, and that's the most descriptive part. Sure. That you would look at. If it's an immature bald eagle, they will look more like a golden eagle because they haven't developed that bald, the white feathering on their head and their tail. And so what you're looking at then is really the armpits, if you will, the underside of the wings where the wings meet the body. On the bald eagle, you'll have some white armpits, whitish armpits, as they start then developing the white head and tail feathers there. But that's what you'd kind of look at in addition to where are you in the state. So if you're in the west, you could see both bald and golden. If you're anywhere away from the western part of the state, almost certainly it's a bald eagle.
Yeah. And just to go along with this, Kay emailed to put in a plug for the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance Eagle Watch Program, and she is observing at her assigned nest site.
Nice.
A nest, and she says there may be eggs in the nest. Some nests are reporting that eaglets have already hatched. So it's an exciting program to volunteer with, the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance Eagle Watch Program.
Yeah, we talked about that when we were on with you in January. But yeah, it's a really cool community science program, and I'm sure that they've got need for some additional observers. So maybe check in with the Southern Wisconsin Bird Alliance.
Yeah. Betty in Pipe has something for us. Hi, Betty.
Hi. Hi, Larry and others. So we have a farm, and we have about 80 acres. And we have had a pair of crows that have been there forever, and they never seem to multiply, these two. If I go down the road maybe 10 miles, there'll probably be 20 of them in a murder. So I'm just wondering, they never seem to raise young. So that's my question. Thank you.
They're always together. Jamie?
Yeah, that is a great observation. I really don't know. I can't think of any thoughts on why they were, you know, may
just
or may not be raising. Always the two of them, and may or may not be raising young.
Could they be brothers or sisters?
Yes, of course. And then the other thing is, I mean, at some point, they're probably leaving your farm. So
yeah.
I don't know if we can be 100% sure it's always the same too, but certainly around agricultural and farmland in that area where you are around Lake Winnebago, I mean, there's certainly lots of crows and they're going somewhere to rest or to roost communally in the evenings. So,
So they may skip out. Betty might see them during the day, but then, when nightfall comes, they fly off and join some others, and then they fly back to Betty's place.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other reason you see a group of crows, as Betty said, the murder of crows, is that when they have their mobbing behavior. So if they see a hawk or an owl, typically crows will gather together and they'll mob that predator because their safety in numbers. And so it may also be that there may not be many crows or hawks around where Betty lives, and there's just not a need for the crows to congregate in numbers greater than two.
Eric in Middleton's moving us over to coyotes, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Eric.
Hi. Yeah, sometimes at this time of year, I'll be out walking at night in Pheasant Branch Park here in Middleton.
Yep.
And it's been a while, but I've heard a chorus of canines that I presume are my coyotes. And I take it from what you said earlier that I was in no danger. But I was just curious, what are they doing when they set up a chorus? And is what I heard coyotes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chances are it probably was coyotes. And they can have barking, not so much a howl, like a timber wolf has a long, mournful howl to it. It sounds rather sad. Red fox don't vocalize as much as what you hear from coyotes because they tend to be in family units and they tend to bark more. We live out in the country in Columbia County and we have coyotes around all the time. Dogs, we have dogs in our own backyard and they're communicating back and forth, but a coyote is communicating perhaps even more at this time of the year because they are going through some courtship and territorial behavior where they might be barking. It can also be a defensive mechanism. So if you're walking your dog and they perhaps are seeing you or hearing you but not knowing what you are, they might be barking. And then they'll also bark at dusk to kind of reunite their family members. And that's where we really hear them a lot and can hear them singing or, talking. So you'll hear a lot of excited yipping and they're kind of gathering their family members back together for the evening.
And in cities, you'll hear them responding to sirens emergency vehicles. You'll hear them responding to train whistles. And as well as to domestic dog barking.
Yeah, and they are a dog in the dog family, and so they do exhibit a lot of that same. Your family dog probably barks when it's on alert or unsure about something. So,
as you mentioned, train whistles. That works on turkeys too.
Yes.
This getting close to that time of the year when the toms will be calling back to a turkey to a train whistle.
Yeah, they use that as a locator call.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh man, Eric, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. I want to turn the attention to fox too because I know fox. Well, there's a lot of research going on, and you're doing some research on fox. Yeah. Populations, David.
Yeah, we've had we've talked about on this project or on this program a number of times. We have had some research and outreach going on with urban coyotes and red fox here in Madison since 2014, and I've got a current graduate student who is researching urban fox dens, and so we're putting a call out to anyone listening. If you know of an active fox den or a fox den that has been used in the past but may not be currently active, we would be very interested in knowing the location of that fox den, and we are specifically looking for fox dens in urban areas, so within city boundaries, not necessarily out in the countryside. And my graduate student is trying to characterize urban fox dens in terms of the size of the diameter, how many entrances there are to the den, the slope, the orientation in terms of which compass angle, all sorts of different things like that, and that's something that has not been characterized in the literature yet. So we're doing that, and just to... If you're not sure what a fox den looks like, it's roughly 10 to 12 inches in diameter. It would have a, usually, especially if it's active, it'll have a pile of dirt at the den entrance. A lot of times you'll see footprints of the fox. You might see remnants of the meals that they've had in terms of squirrels or rabbits, something like that. And based on our experience, at least, is a lot of times an active fox den, you will get a whiff of skunk. And it's because fox eats so much skunk that you will actually smell that scent emanating from the fox den. So if you know of a fox den or you think you know of a fox den, if you don't mind taking a picture of that and emailing myself, so you can either Google my name, David Drake in UW-Madison, or my email address is ddrake2, so D-D-R-A-K-E, the number 2, at WISC, the first four letters of Wisconsin.edu. And if you wouldn't mind emailing a picture of that fox den, and if you take a picture, if you could put some scale on that picture, either your foot or your pocket knife or a dollar bill, your cell phone, something like that would be helpful. And then if you can send us the coordinates, that would be also be very helpful, and we would be grateful.
All right. We may mention that again.
Yeah. I was just going to make a suggestion, too, that sometimes, you know, in urban areas where you have often seen fox dens, but, you know, under porches, maybe you have a garden shed. They'll dig a hole underneath that garden shed. Sometimes with the Ice Age Trail and the different trails and the railroad embankments, sometimes just that embankment might be the ideal place for a fox.
Yep.
And fox themselves have that really musky odor.
Yeah,
so
Yes, they do.
And Eric in Madison can tell us about another place where there might be foxes living. Eric, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hey, David and another guest here. Jamie, excuse me. I'm a former grad from the Wildlife Department and just moved back to Madison. But when I was living in Madison before, or Monona, we used to golf at the Monona Golf Course. And there was a fox den that was on maybe the fifth hole. Anyway, this den of foxes, they would run out and grab people's golf balls from the fairway.
Yes.
And store them in their den. And I guess when the grounds people would go out and clear out the brush pile at the end of the season, they'd find hundreds of golf balls in there.
Yeah.
And I actually witnessed it twice live when I was golfing with a friend of mine. He teed off and great drive down the fairway. Boom, fox runs out, grabs his Titleist, runs it back into the den, and he's like, "Ah, how's my Titleist free?"
That's great.
And he tees off another one, and the fox comes back out and grabs his second Titleist that he came back out and took it all back into that. It was
that is great.
I'm not sure if they're still there, but it was quite a good experience when we were out on the court.
That's very great story.
Yeah, thank
great
you so
story.
Much.
And I think you're right about the fifth hole. That's a par five on Lake Monona Golf Course. And I played that a lot last year on Friday afternoons after the show was over.
Yeah.
And I never saw the fox, so I think the fox must have moved on or died or
something.
We
will go investigate, but thanks for that tip.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Fifth hole is close to the shelter there.
Yeah. Watch your golf balls.
Yeah, no kidding.
Eric, that's a great story. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. David Drake's an Extension Wildlife Specialist, and Professor Jamie Nack's an Extension Senior Wildlife Outreach Specialist. They both reside within Extension and the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. And we've got Courtney Everett. She resides within Wisconsin Public Radio.
I do. I live here. Teasing you.
She I don't know where she gets her. She's always clean and clean living, I think, but she must be getting her showers from someplace, maybe within the bowels of the building. But
I don't even know how to respond to that.
Well,
I'm glad I don't smell sitting next to
you,
Larry.
She has to get up pretty early in the morning because of her job.
Yes, good old morning edition.
Good old morning edition. And it's one of the great programs, along with this one, that you're going to find here at WPR. And I'm sure you've heard her voice many a time, and you've heard my voice many a time as well. Your gift to support the two of us and everybody else here at WPR It keeps these programs that you value, including this one, on the air. So make your contribution right now if you haven't done it already. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-powered. That means your support makes WPR news analysis, conversations, and weekend fun available not only for yourself but for the entire community. Thank you for making WPR's public service mission possible with your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On the Larry Miller Show, we focus on how to make your life better every day. We have practical advice. So we deal with topics that affect the community. Of course, we talk for sure the first Wednesday of every month about Wisconsin wildlife. And I see Mary Kay in Kenosha has something about a red fox that we'll hear from her in just a minute or two. Lots of interesting topics. We cover the university and the state. Of course, we look at health issues, consumer protection, and sports from time to time as well. And, for example, today we're looking not at Courtney Everett and her...
hair swoop. It's my signature.
Her living in the bowels of Vilas Hall. We're
I don't think I'll get sick of you saying bowels.
B-O-W-E-L-S.
Yes, very good.
Well, and now are you learning anything today? What are we talking about? I'm giving you a test. What are we talking about today?
Well, I know on the par five at the Monona Golf Course, there's a fox that hopefully isn't dead. No, but there's just so many wonderful things that, you know, I really enjoy listening to your show, Larry. And, you know, just by donating, there's certain things in your life that you may spend money on, like coffee and take out, and those things add up. But WPR is part of your routine, right, Larry?
Yeah, it really is. It's part of your routine. You listen probably most every day and listen whenever you can. Maybe it's the preset. In your car. That's my preset. It's right
That's
at the top.
That's mine, too. Mm-hmm.
It's right at the top because there's a glare on my screen. It's an older car.
Oh, and you don't have the navigation
well,
thing?
Well, if the light's on, if the sun's bright, I can't see the presets. You know, there's a half a dozen of them in a
right.
row. So I put that one at the top because I can see what's at the top.
So if you have a car like Larry's, shift it so you know what you're listening to, and it is WPR, in fact.
Oh, man. Start your day. Start the rest of your day today with a gift right now. Maybe $30 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I feel very good to be a sustainer.
Makes me feel like I'm a part of what's happening.
I know it's a valuable service.
I like being a sustainer because it helps contribute to the Wisconsin idea.
I like being a sustainer because I just like knowing that my money will be supporting Wisconsin Public Radio for years to come.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation during our winter member drive. Larry Miller with Courtney Everett. Join in with your gift right now because WPR's essential service is available to you and your community because of your support.
Exactly. And if you've never given to Wisconsin Public Radio before, we are especially talking to you this drive. We have other ways of contacting our current members, but the best way we have to contact you, the listener, who hasn't given yet, is through these drives.
And today our goal is to unlock an additional $10,000 from current members. This goal is very important. We have shocking news.
Breaking news. It has been reached.
We did 100 in the first hour?
Well, I mean, yes and no. We contributed in the back half of this challenge. But because we've met our participation goal, this is not over yet, Larry, because we are offering another $5,000 if we can get 200 more gifts by 6 p.m. today.
Oh, why couldn't we do that in the next hour and a half?
I think we can make it happen.
Well, we'll give it a try. You can help make it happen. If you haven't contributed yet, go to WPR.org or phone 888 uh, two, 202-202. Let me do it again. 888-202-2552 to make your contribution. And, oh, man, Lillian Lake Nabagamon has a nice comment.
She says, "The Larry Mueller Show makes me feel connected to my community and the land I live on at a level I've not experienced before."
I love that.
I also am impressed the fact that you said that so perfectly. I have never even seen that lake before.
I wondered. I know that lake, so I...
Well, Larry, I know you know a lot of things in Wisconsin. I had faith you were going to pronounce
and
it right.
I thought I would say it and save you the...
Bless you.
Oh, that was Lily in Lake Nabagamon. And if you probably don't live there, but wherever you live, thanks a lot for your gift. If you haven't done it, do it right now. It really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and thank you. We are looking at the world of wildlife today with our two UW wildlife experts, David Drake and J.B. Knack. Great to have them with us today. And Mary Kay and Kenosha, thanks for waiting. You've got a little story for us, I believe.
Yeah. Yesterday I was looking out the window, and I seen a large red fox with a small face, and more than half of its tail was white, and it was headed towards Lake Michigan.
So Mary Kay,
I thought it was a cat, but when it got up, it was quite large.
Yeah, well, it could be a red fox.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's always the possibility it was a larger tomcat too. David and I were talking a little bit. I've never seen a red fox with an all white tail, either personally or seen reports of it.
This one has a half a white tail.
Half of a white tail. And so, you know, maybe there's something going on with that individual in terms of some type of genetic mutation. But we also do have some fur farms that raise ranch fox, and it's possible there's some inbreeding with an escaped animal. We get different color morphs that way as well. But it might even just have been a little bit lighter. I think, you know, you can have a really light-colored fox, especially as they're shedding their... winter coat. It'd be a little early for that, but it's possible. That's usually time to photo period. But
could it be leucistic or?
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe. I mean, the red fox have a white tip to their tail to begin with, and so maybe just that white has crept up the tail a little bit more than normal.
Yeah, and it's all, you know, our eyes and how we see things, you know, can be deceiving as well. So, but yeah, If you catch a picture of it, we'd love to see it.
Yeah, I would. If you see that again, Mary Kay,
that would be great.
Shoot me a photo of it, and we'll pass it along to David and Jamie, or we even put it up today yet if we get it. But appreciate the call. It's unusual, and you were lucky. You were lucky to see it.
That's the wonderful world. They're
beautiful.
Of
that way. Yeah.
Beautiful animals, yeah. So getting to see it in general is wonderful.
Lois and DeForest, we go to you. Hi, Lois.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I've been studying coyotes for about 10 years. In fact, Professor Drake helped me write my first citizen resolution that I submitted to the WCC. And that means that I have learned a lot about them from new science. For example, there was a report by National Geographic that scientists are studying coyotes for their genetic monogamy characteristic, which means that they mate for life, seriously, and they go through stress and brain changes based on the science.
Lois, thanks a lot for calling. And David, it sounds like she's right on the money on that.
Yep, she is. You know, coyotes are, relatively speaking, are a very intelligent animal. And obviously, because they are a habitat generalist, they range across a wide variety of different types of habitats and land uses and land covers. Especially when they're in urban areas, they come in contact with a lot of different stimulation, and the more stimulation, the more variables they're crossing over, they've got to process all of that in their head. And so it does make for a very smart animal, a very adaptable animal, for sure.
Yeah, and with an interesting family life.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So they live as a pack. We call them as a pack. And you know, typically it's probably 4 to 6 animals in a pack in the urban areas, maybe a little bit smaller in the rural areas because there's just not as many resources to support as large a pack. But yeah, they live as a family. You have a dominant male, dominant female that do the breeding, and you know, the especially the male subordinates, they get kicked out of that female or that natal territory at the end of the natal season in the fall. Typically, the females might stick around, but yep, they're super cool animals. Real interesting dynamics of the pack, and then there's some stability there with the breeding pair for sure.
And you know what, Courtney Everett and I are part of the WPR pack.
I like that.
We're pack members.
I love it.
We are. You know, we've got this community right here at Wisconsin Public Radio within the building itself, but then we've got this very large pack that stretches across the whole state of Wisconsin. We got a big pack of people.
I know. It is amazing, but it's just Wisconsin, right?
No, it's not just.
Oh, no, I meant the people of Wisconsin.
Oh, the people of Wisconsin.
It's very much Wisconsin.
Oh, it's very much. And that's what we zero in on.
Yeah.
We zero in on Wisconsin. And in our Wisconsin Public Radio member drive, Courtney and I want to remind you that your gift makes a huge difference because listeners, you're part of that pack. You're the largest source of funding for our shows. So I hope you'll step up and be counted as a supporter with your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And earlier today, we released $10,000 because we met our participation challenge. We needed at least 300 donors, which is amazing, but we still have time, and we are unlocking another $5,000 if we get 200 more gifts by 6 p.m., and Larry has faith that we can make it happen in this next hour.
We can make a very big dent in it. You know, it's pretty cool because you got a group of generous donors, members, who have created the challenge, and they do it because they want to, you know, and sort of inspire and entice you to, as part of the whole community, to contribute, and we rely on that.
Exactly, and we can meet this challenge. Your gift of any amount now makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We always have an interesting program when we talk about wildlife, and I know it's a very popular show, and I think it's a benefit to listeners. Lisa in Whitefish Bay's got an email about a gray fox trotting along the top of her neighbor's wooden fence. We're going to talk about that some more. And we've heard a number of really interesting calls today. And, of course, Jamie and David have great answers and great comments of their own about their own experiences. We're listener-supported here, and that means when you give at WPR.org or you phone 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a minute or two and make your gift.
And make your donation even easier when you become a sustainer. Choose an amount that's right for you, maybe $10 a month, and have it charged from your bank account or credit card.
That's a good idea. When you're a sustainer, your monthly gift can, you know, it's every month. It goes on, and it can go on year after year. Your support then is always current. And you can start that ongoing monthly gift now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And we're asking your support as we get close to the top of the hour here. We're asking for your support for the quality programs that you value with WPR. Your gift right now during the drive, $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, it really does make a big difference for our community.
And when you become a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you took an important first step. Now take that next step and become a financial supporter.
Nancy in Racine says, I grew up with Wisconsin Public Radio. My mom always called it a state station. Now I keep my radio dial on WPR always for reliable, balanced
great
news and entertainment. Thanks so much, Nancy, for that comment. Here we are. We're going to the top of the hour, and we'll have some news, but then we'll be back with David and Jamie. We're going to talk more about wildlife for the next hour. But if you haven't contributed yet, this would be a good time to go to WPR.org and make your contribution. Or if you want a phone, you can go to 888-202-2552 and make that contribution. We'll be back, Courtney and I and David and Jamie, after this look at the news. We are taking a look at the wonderful world of wildlife today on the program. Larry Mueller here with my guests Jamie Nack and David Drake. Jamie's an Extension Senior Wildlife Outreach Specialist. David is an Extension Wildlife Specialist and Professor, both affiliated with the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison campus. It's great to have them with us, and then they'll stick around here till 1 o'clock during our winter member drive. Courtney Everett's also here, and she's looking perky and happy and ready to go.
Thanks, Larry. You always know how to compliment me.
You're always excited to get going with things. I like how the positive approach that you take to life.
Yeah, and honestly, I always think the glass is half full. I approach that to everything I do.
Well, what about you as you listen to the two of us gab? Think about Wisconsin Public Radio for a minute and the funding for the programs that you enjoy. Listener support's our biggest source of funding, and so it's your opportunity to take some action now. You make the programs possible when you give at WPR.org, or maybe you phone in 888-202-2552, and we've got that $5,000 challenge.
Yeah,
going.
It's a special challenge because we've already unlocked our other participation challenge from earlier today, but we have another one. So we're going to unlock $5,000 with 200 additional fellow listeners supporting with their gift. So we really are counting on you to make that donation before 6 p.m. tonight because this is the last day of drive.
It's pretty cool. A group of generous donors, or members, I should say, have made this. Well, donors, and when you donate, you're a member. You become a member. And it's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting the programs that inform and inspire you and the entire state of Wisconsin.
Exactly. Your participation now is vital. You can help meet this challenge before the end of the day today. And it simply starts with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have tens of thousands of members right now. And when you donate, you become one of those members. Pulled together, your support makes up the largest source of our funding.
Your support is powerful. You make possible all the WPR news and talk and entertainment that you value, just like the Larry Mueller Show. And what I love, too, about your show, Larry, people call in. People get to learn. You get to hear from those listeners that you are informing every day. How special is that?
It's pretty special. I was trying to do the math on it. There, over my career here, since we started the call-in show, there's probably 400,000, 500,000 calls to the
show,
somewhere in that neighborhood. That's a lot of calls.
I hope we keep that many calls after you retire.
I hope so, too, because I'll be listening, and maybe I'll call someday. I'll disguise my voice.
That's pretty good.
Hello, this is Larry
Johnson. Miller. Larry Johnson. I like that. Well, WPR is probably preset in your home or car if you enjoy listening to Larry and our other programs. And perhaps maybe you listen to WPR a lot. So help pay for the station you enjoy so much. Become a member today.
Make your gift right now with a gift of, what is it, $20 a month, let's say, maybe $10. Whatever
doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. At WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I've been a public radio listener for as long as it's been around. It's a long time. Public radio for me is pretty much the only kind of radio that that I would choose to listen to. My name is Penny, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for programming I can't get anywhere else.
And you know what? Penny has a radio voice. She's got a nice voice for radio.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a member. And you can become a member, too. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Courtney Everett. Listener support's the biggest source of our funding, and your gift, maybe it's 10 bucks a month, maybe it's... I have some friends who give over $100 a month, actually, to Wisconsin Public Radio. You could do that, too. But choose whatever amount that's right for you, and then make a pledge.
Yeah, we know you value your time, and we value your time, too. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio just takes a few minutes. Tell us your name, contact information, how much you would want to give, and how you would like to pay.
And we know you value your time, and we value your time, too. So giving is as Courtney's been saying, and I've been saying, it just takes a couple of minutes. Your name, your contact information.
Yep.
How much you want to give and how you'd like to pay.
Yeah, and maybe you spend $10 on books or games or apps or that Netflix subscription. I have so many subscriptions at home, Larry. But these are all little things that make your day better, just like Wisconsin Public Radio. So the gift of $10 a month or $12 a month gets you our WPR logo mug, of course. That makes a difference for the public service you rely on.
12 bucks a month, and that's... Yeah,
it's not
too bad.
Pretty
good, especially for that mug. That mug is really nice. Jamie's looking to try and sneak it out the door.
I'm not surprised. It's a hot item. I've heard that we have to order more.
We do?
Yes.
Oh.
Because it's been so popular. So keep on donating and ask for the mug.
Well, I donated and I'm getting one. So
that's great.
There, I've got every one we've ever offered. So, and this one's the biggest one. It's really pretty, too.
It is really nice. It has an orange lip, and then it's like black and white speckled with the logo on it. It's pretty sharp.
I like it. And, you know, if you want to donate, contribute 12 bucks a month, we'll send you one. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Andrew in De Pere, Wisconsin, says he relies on WPR as the best news and talk radio available.
Oh, he must be talking about you.
Very powerful. Really makes a difference at WPR.org. Or make a contribution by phone at 888-202-2552. And thank you very much as we visit with David Drake and Jamie Knack about Wisconsin wildlife. And Don in Bayfield County has a story for us. Let's go there. Hi, Don.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Say, I was out rabbit hunting one time, and I knew there was a fox den because I could smell it before I found it. So I thought I'd bring my camera and kill rabbit and throw it up next to the fox den. And darn it, you know what happened? That rabbit went right down in the fox den.
The rabbit ran down the wrong hole there.
So I stood there for a couple of minutes, and I could, no, they were tearing it all apart.
Oh, my gosh.
That's fun. I have similar, you know, memories from being a field in the winter like that, rabbit hunting, but coming across brush piles, and on a cold day, you could see the breath of the animal, mm-hmm. you know, in that brush pile, so you could see steam rising. And same thing, I think many cases, those were fox dens. So, yeah, very cool.
Very cool, Don. That's a great story. If you have a story or just a question, I hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234. You could email the talk at WPR.org. I want to go back to, I mentioned sort of in passing, Lisa in Whitefish Bay emailed, saw a gray fox trotting along the top of her neighbor's tall wooden fence in the backyard in Whitefish Bay. And she's wondering, how common are they in urban settings? And you were kind of mentioning that earlier, David.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, yep. So we have, you know, amongst the wild canids that we have in Wisconsin, we've got the wolves, which are the largest, coyotes, second largest, red fox, and then gray fox. And gray fox are just slightly smaller than red fox. Red fox are obviously red. Gray fox are obviously gray. They've got a black tip to their tail. Gray fox are typically more associated with wooded areas, so forested landscapes. And they actually can climb trees, are quite capable tree climbers. So we don't know a lot about gray foxes. We get reports of them, especially even in urban areas, but we don't know how common they are, although they must be common enough that we get regular reports. of them in urban areas, which is pretty cool. And then obviously they're also out throughout the state of Wisconsin as well. So very cool. What a neat thing to see. And you expect to look out of your back fence and you see maybe a squirrel walking along there, but to see a gray fox is pretty dang cool.
Joan and Jean had emailed. She lives on a farm south of Verona, and her son has a trail cam set up. And the other evening, his golden doodle, who's very elderly and kind of slow, he saw on the camera, she went out, the golden doodle went around a clump of fir trees, and a coyote was waiting until the dog saw him, and then they would scoot around the trees just playing with each other, and they kept going around and around the circle. She says she's never seen them play like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of stories about domestic dogs kind of interacting with either wolves or coyotes or fox. And again, you know, they're members of the same family, and they're, you know, checking each other out. But I would say just, you know, manage that cautiously because they also are territorial. And coyotes, for example, will drive fox out of an area. So often in a rural setting, you have areas where you have coyotes, and then you have other areas where you have red fox, and often not both at the same.
Yeah.
David's finding a little bit different situation in urban settings. I don't know if you want to share a little bit.
We found in some of our research that coyotes and red fox have an opposite relationship than in non-urban areas. In urban areas, at least in Madison, we've been able to demonstrate that coyotes and red fox can coexist both in the same space at the same time, and the coyotes are not a predator of red fox, or we haven't been able to demonstrate that in our urban study area. And we attribute that to the fact that in urban areas, there's just such a plethora of food or such an abundance of food that these traditional competitors can actually share that abundance, abundant resource, and don't have to compete for it.
Michael emailed us recently on the show. I had Patricia McConnell on. We were talking about dogs. It came up. Somebody's dog was afraid of thunder. And Michael asked if wolves are afraid of thunder, and if not, how did dogs become afraid? She didn't know if wolves feared thunder. Do you know if wolves fear thunder?
Well, this would be a really good question for Patricia when it comes to the domestic side, but I have not heard. Imagine with wolves evolving in the presence of thunder that they've learned and that there's no harm, right? Whether they could associate the following lightning strike and thunder being something to be aware of or to seek shelter or that rain is coming is probably something they've, you know, figured out where they seek shelter because they know there's a storm coming. The dog's behavior, I would guess Patricia would maybe say, and maybe you know, Larry, that you know, sometimes it's how we respond with thunder. So if we're like, oh, it's okay, everything's fine, come cuddle over here, you know, it's thundering, the dog takes that as something they should be concerned about. So
and the wolves in their packs, they look at mom and dad and they're not doing anything, so they're not gonna worry about it either. You know, I wanted to mention, turn our attention a bit to birds. We were talking about birds earlier in the show, but there's some research out. I was just looking at the article in Science Magazine, a very large article. They are in decline, and Science Magazine and they were quoting some other research, David, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's a really interesting article and a very disturbing article that came out last week in Science. And there's a lot to unpack in this article, so I'll try to focus it and narrow it down to Wisconsin specific. But generally, there's two different ways that we survey for birds across the entire continent of North America. So one we've talked about, we survey birds in the wintertime. That's called the Christmas bird count. The other survey that we've talked less about is called the breeding bird survey, and that is done typically in the spring or the summer when birds are on their breeding grounds. And so these researchers examined over 1,000 breeding bird survey routes across all of the United States and into southern Canada. They examined the abundance of 261 different bird species over a 35-year period, so from 1987 to 2021. And what they found is across 70% of those breeding bird survey routes that they found a declines in avian abundance. So only in 17% of those routes do they find increases in abundance of birds. And so of 261 species, nearly half of those species they examined, or 47%, they saw a significant decline. So there's a statistical decline in those bird species across all of those routes. And even more concerning is 25% of those 261 species they examined had accelerated declines. And they define accelerated decline as there were more birds lost this year than there were in the previous year that they examined. And so those accelerated declines were typically, they saw them overlap with high-intensity agricultural operations. And that's typically in the Mid-Atlantic states, Midwest, including Wisconsin, and in California. And so in high-intensity ag, what they were considering high-intensity ag areas are areas with high fertilizer use, high pesticide use, and areas with large contiguous areas of croplands. And so we certainly have that in Wisconsin, but it is disturbing to see that there's that comprehensive and significant decline of avian species across the United States for a whole host of reasons. Obviously, people really enjoy birds, but birds offer a tremendous amount of ecosystem services that continue to improve the health of our ecosystems and ourselves. And so with the decline of the birds, we would potentially expect to see some decline of ecosystem services.
Yeah. David Drake and Jamie Nack, our guests today, as we talk the world of wildlife, there's good news and there's sometimes very disturbing news as we talk with them. And it's all part of our ecosystem and our environment and the environment of our wildlife. As we go through, and Courtney Everett's joining me again here for our member drive, these are important topics to deal with, and listeners, I think, and pretty sure, find it interesting, sometimes disturbing, sometimes a lot of fun. And
I mean, when the rabbit went into the wolf den, that was a little bit much for me.
Oh my goodness me! It's amazing. Well, it's amazing what the stories you hear.
Oh yeah, I love hearing your listeners.
They're such an important part of the program, you know, and there are, I don't remember how many, you know, there's several hundred thousand calls as over the course of my show career here, and they really make the program zing for us. And your drive is a chance to support that zing and all the programs that you enjoy here at WPR. I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we've been saying it throughout these few hours that this is the single largest source of funding for WPR. And now that federal funding for public media has been eliminated, listener support is more important than ever. And there is still challenges ahead, but together we can keep WPR strong. So support the programming that enhances your day at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think I said before that the World of Wildlife program that we do the first Wednesday of the month is one of our most popular programs, and I think it's a lot of people listening because it's a benefit to listeners, and I think it enriches people's lives as they listen. Here we are, listener-supported, and when you give at WPR.org or you phone 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and make your gift.
A great way to support WPR is by becoming a sustaining member. Maybe you've called into the show, spoken with Larry. Well, now you can become a sustainer too. You can make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or even your credit card.
And I know a lot of people give $10 or $20 a month. You choose whatever amount you choose. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We know folks love a good mug, especially WPR supporters. And we've got a special one for you this drive. it will quickly become your favorite.
I would describe it as a speckled mug.
My son would use this the most because he loves orange.
Looks like we got sort of a camp mug looking thing here.
I would always have it filled with a hot beverage. Tea.
Coffee every day. Lots of coffee.
Hot cocoa for sure.
Hot chocolate.
My hot tea in the afternoon.
Ask for your WPR logo mug when you give $12 a month or more. Here's how.
Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution during our member drive. Your gift, 10, 20 bucks a month, whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
Yes, and we have that mug that you heard earlier, $12 a month. You can get this, and I don't know what your answer is going to be, Larry, but what do you put in your mug?
Well, it depends on where I am. And
if it's after 5 p.m.?
Who's with me?
All right, we'll consider making that extra gift of then, say, $50, $100 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Join in this drive, and thank you for your extra support for the programs you enjoy every day.
And if you're a sustaining member, I want to thank you very much for that. And, you know, I've got friends that have done this. They said, well, I was already giving 100 and whatever a month, and I said, well, just add $5. You know, you could add, and if you're a sustaining member, think about it. Okay, what's another $5 or another $10? Why not do that if you're already a sustaining member? And just go back to that same WPR.org, or maybe you just want to pick up the phone and call 888-202-2552, and you can make that a little addition.
Exactly. And we do have an ongoing challenge today where we are offering $5,000 if we can get 200 more gifts by 6 p.m. today, as today marks the last day of our drive. And I think we can make it happen, Larry.
I think we can, too, with your contribution at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Donna in Menasha says, WPR News is so interesting, and I've learned so much. WPR is a vital service. Helps keep me and everyone else educated, entertained, enlightened, and honestly informed. What about that? What about you? Give right now at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Make your contribution, and thank you. Looking at the world of wildlife today with David Drake and Jamie Knack. It's always great to have them with us. And Vicki in Eau Claire has a question for us. Let's go there. Vicki, hi.
Hi. I've got a question about deer. We've got about 9 young deer that visit our yard frequently. And lately, I think they've got spring fever or something because they'll be walking through the yard. Suddenly, they'll couple of them will start running, they're leaping, they're jumping, going full out, and just look like they're playing and having fun and wondering what that's all about.
Yeah, I bet they are.
Yeah, they probably are. They're a little excited to feel the signs of spring as well. It's been a long winter for wildlife. Chances are they are young deer, and they're practicing, preparing for other behaviors. So whether that's avoiding predation, or predators, so they're frolicking, but with some intent. You know, it's part of their learning. And in addition, you know, eventually will be breeding season, and you'll see some different behaviors during that time as well. It's early for an adult doe to kick out last year's fawns, but that will be, you know, happening eventually too.
So, yeah,
but yeah.
A friend, Bob Cooney, was telling me once about when he was turkey hunting. He was sitting up on a hill looking down into a kind of a valley, and there were some turkeys down there, and there were some deer. And he had a lot of fun watching. One deer would kind of take a little run at this one turkey and then quickly run back. And then the turkey would run at him and then quickly run back. And he said it was so much fun just watching them play together.
Yeah. Yeah, they get spring fever too, I guess.
Yeah.
Vicki, thank you very much for calling. Brenda in Door County, what's on your mind?
He said it was so much.
Oh, well, good afternoon. I had the honor of attending a crow funeral. I had come up around a wide curve onto a county road, which is not very, doesn't have a lot of traffic. And there was, it looked like hundreds of crows in a maple tree. Crows were walking in along the side of the road from both directions. There was one dead crow on its back right off the side of the road. Crows were just coming in from all directions, and a few of the crows at a time would walk up to the dead crow and kind of stand there, and some would kind of walk around it. And then, you know, it just kept changing like that.
It was like a funeral.
Unfortunately, I didn't have my... It was a crow funeral, yes. And I know there is such a thing. Well, at least I read about them a lot. The other thing is that I thought it was very quiet for that amount of crows to be there. And I was wondering, is this a typical, you know,
is this
crow
something
funeral?
That's observed?
There is not uncommon to have crow roosts of hundreds of crows. And that's typically where they'll go at nighttime to roost, and they can be very, very loud, and they can be very, very smelly. But it doesn't sound like this was necessarily the crow roost issue here, but they will congregate. But crows are also very social animals. They've got a really interesting social structure to their group, and they are also highly intelligent animals. And so they may have actually been some recognition of the loss of a member of their group there, and that may have been what you were observing.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it a bit.
Yeah,
I wouldn't doubt it a bit.
That's neat.
Yeah, that's very interesting, Brenda. Thank you so much. You can join in, too, by the way, and the number's 800-642-1234. Bruce called to ask if the bird study that we were talking about earlier, if they looked at wind farms as a source of reducing the population. I'm not sure it came up in that one, but certainly there are other sources.
Yeah.
We were just talking about one the other day, a large building in Chicago that had pretty much all glass.
Yep.
And there were 6,000, something like 6,000 birds that were killed on a, like in one.
One evening.
One evening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So I have done in a previous life a lot of research on impacts from wind energy to birds and bats. And typically what we found and what is typically reported in the literature is that birds are not impacted, lethally impacted from wind farms to the extent that bats are. So wind farms typically don't have much of an impact to bird populations. Buildings, for sure, are the second leading cause of annual mortality to birds, second to cats and predation. So, but in this study, they looked at a bunch of different variables, and what shook out is that it was high-intensity agricultural production areas, as we've talked about. And then the other issue is that they saw pretty significant declines in areas where in the southern part of the United States and in warmer areas of North America. And what they attributed that to was climate change and the fact that those areas were warming and birds were abandoning those areas for cooler areas. But it was typically the two leading causes of bird decreases in bird abundance in this study, at least, was climate change and high-intensity agricultural production.
Very interesting. Dan in Eau Claire called to say the Sandhills are back in Eau Claire.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
awesome.
It's a really fun time of the year if you keep track of phenological events or your first signs of spring. But I know great blue herons have been back, but that was a bird I saw this morning, and red-winged blackbirds. And with this warmer temperature, it's going to be, I would not be surprised if we hear wood frogs calling, spring peepers, chorus frogs. Pretty soon they might go quiet again, but it's going to warm up and we're going to see all sorts of things awakening.
And obviously what we're talking about is a little bit south of Eau Claire, but we're talking about, obviously, we experience things here in the southern part of the state quicker than you would in the northern part of the state, but it is coming.
You can always tell because Odana Golf Course announces its official opening, which they did for Saturday.
So
That is
very nice.
George V. Kalick used to be on the show, rest his soul, but he always said he knew when it was spring because the Blue Jays would come to Milwaukee, Toronto
Blue Jays. The Toronto Blue Jays.
Nice.
Oh, my goodness me. Michael called to ask, this relates back to the coyotes and the foxes, wondering if there are there population control measures in Madison relating to those animals?
No, there are not. And there typically are not in urban areas across the United States. The biggest mortality factor in urban areas for both coyotes and red fox is getting hit by a vehicle.
That's the
control.
So they're not very long-lived, you also know as well, right,
from some of your research? So we haven't done as much research in that as Stan Garrett has. Stan's at Ohio State University and runs the Chicago Coyote Project. And Stan thinks that on average a coyote lifespan is about 3-ish years.
Yeah.
But we had a coyote, the very first coyote we radio collared on our project, we were able to track him through a variety of methods, but we found him dead, and he was at least 8 years old because we collared him, and he was at least an adult of 1 year of age at that point when we collared him, and we found him 8 years later.
Well, Eddie had a pretty good life while he was here
because he
had not a lot of people bothering him.
No,
he had access to a lot of food.
And he was in pretty good health when we found him.
Yeah. Nick in Green Bay, what's on your mind?
Hey, I've got a question. I love birds. My favorite bird is a chickadee, but my question is, my yard's pretty sparse with trees. I've got one tree in the front yard, so I don't have a lot of birds, but I like to attract them. And my neighbor, he's got a cat that he lets roam, which makes me upset. But I'd like to attract more birds, and he doesn't really appreciate that, but I really don't care what he thinks.
Okay. Well, there are, other than trees, there are shrubs and other things, Jamie.
Yeah, a couple considerations. You know, you can certainly feed birds, but your long-term investment, doing some things to landscape that yard a little bit more, will do a lot to attract not only birds but other wildlife species too. And there's a couple different things you could do to look for native trees and shrubs. There's the Audubon Society has a native plant database. If you just go to their website and you type in your zip code, it will populate with a list of native trees and shrubs and what bird species they attract. And you can kind of sort through that or use that as a starting point of trees and shrubs in your area that would grow well. And use that to think about how you might landscape your yard to be a little bit more bird friendly. Now, that does make me a little bit concerned about the neighbor's cat, because you don't want to attract birds and then create what is a sink where the cat depredates. Cat feeder. So you do want to be a little bit strategic maybe in the placement of those shrubs. But again, it also makes sense to maybe not feed bird seed, but rather provide native trees and shrubs and native food sources, so they're not honing in on a feeder, which can be
just one spot.
If you've got shrubs
and so forth and other things around, then they're in a bunch of different areas.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then beyond that, there are some wonderful publications on creating bird-friendly backyards. Mariette Nowak is an author of one of them that is really exceptional. So
some things to think about,
but wonderful sources out there to help you.
And I've got a wonderful source of information for you if you want to contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, because Courtney Everett's got the voice for it and the enthusiasm and the energy.
All right.
And here she came rushing into the studio all breathless just to say, oh, we got to do a break here.
Lying. I was sitting here very engaged in this conversation. I mean, you were talking about crow funerals.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we've ever talked about crow funerals before on the show. It's the first time that I can recall it.
It was so fascinating.
It is, and I think it's one of the things that makes this program and so many of our programs unique and enriching, and you're going to learn from. And I hope you think that it's time maybe to support the programs that you enjoy, like this one. And now would be a good time to do it. When you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this program and everything else you hear on WPR possible.
And today is the final day of our winter membership drive, and so we are looking to receive 200 more gifts by 6 p.m. today because that will unlock a $5,000 matching donation from generous listeners, just like the ones who are listening right now. So you can join that. Make that gift before 6 p.m. today.
They won't tell me how many have already contributed out of that 200. I think they only tell you.
I haven't seen any updates, but yeah, yes, I agree.
You haven't seen any updates. Well, I haven't either. Well, maybe there haven't been any. Oh, I believe there have been.
I believe so, too.
I really think that's going to be true. And, it's just some people that are members. That they get, they get together and, let's put $5,000 in there. And that is a way to inspire you to support the programs that you enjoy.
Yeah, in a single month, there are hundreds of discussions on Wisconsin Public Radio. There is just so much to learn, interesting people, topics such as Wildlife Wednesday we hear on the Larry Mueller Show. And so when you support with a donation, you make all of those conversations possible. Take that simple, powerful step right now when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I think I've done about 30,000 interviews over my...
Oh, my gosh. I only did my math recently because I have nothing compared to you. I'm in 15 years of journalism, and I'm only over the 1,000 mark. I can't... 30,000?
A couple of topics every day. I had to do the math. You can figure it out.
Yeah.
A lot of times, three.
Wow.
But... So when I do three, people are kind of getting more than they are paying for.
I agree.
And I think WPR is one place where that's true pretty much every day.
Exactly.
You might consider a gift of $2 a day to support the programs you love.
Yeah. And, that can work out to even $60 a month. And you can make that gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I started donating quite a few years ago. I took the plunge. It was the first thing that I had ever done with the sustaining type of membership. It was painless, and so I've just continued. I trust Wisconsin Public Radio. I also trust them to use my money wisely. I'm Bea Liebel from Merrill, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution during our drive. Larry Mueller here with Courtney Everett. And join with your gift right now. We have an essential service, I think, here, and it's available to you and your community thanks to your support.
Yes, and shout out to Jill and Combined Locks that says, I have twin infants, and WPR has been an important part of our days. I am grateful to have something reliable to turn on that keeps me connected to the world. And hopefully the kid's quiet, right?
Hopefully, or maybe the soothing voice of Courtney Everett.
Oh, thank you.
Lulls them to sleep.
Yes, or, rabbits getting eaten in fox dens.
Yeah,
the Larry Mueller Show.
The fox den. Oh, my gosh. Oh, well, you learn something new every day. If it's not rabbits running into the fox den, it's even crow funerals. Something that you never know what you're going to what we're going to cover here on our wildlife shows with David Drake and Jamie Knack. Your gift, though, it really, you want to talk about something powerful. Your gift really is powerful. It really does make a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thank you. Taking a look at the world of wildlife today with David Drake, Extension Wildlife Specialist Professor, and Jamie Knack, Extension Senior Wildlife Outreach Specialist, both within Extension and the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. Questions? Give a call to the number 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk at WPR.org. We had a number of people talking about birds and the breeding season, birds that they're seeing. We're hearing a lot of that. And the migration?
It's starting. It's started. We're probably, a month and maybe a month and a half from the beginning of the peak of it. But when you see or hear sandhill cranes and bluebirds and red-winged blackbirds and cedar waxwings, some of the early migratory species. It gives you hope that spring really is coming.
And we've got, what, bluebirds I usually see around May 2nd.
Right? Yeah, for coming.
Second, between the 2nd and the 5th.
Yeah, and my timeline when I think about bluebirds is March 1st is the time to start cleaning out your bluebird houses in preparation for their arrival. So that's true for wood ducks as well. But for those of you that maintain some nesting boxes, you want to be getting out there in the next couple of weeks because they'll be checking those out and investigating them for potential nest sites. So, and the males are usually back on territory first.
Well, I'm starting to hear more noise. Nice noise.
Yeah.
In the morning, you know, that just right around dawn, you know, when I'm out for my 2-3 mile run in the morning. Yeah. Well, now it's come down to a walk and then a jog here and there.
You're still out there.
Yeah, that's right.
But I'm starting to hear the cardinals and some of the others.
We were walking into work this morning, and there was a male cardinal closely following a female cardinal. And the cardinals are getting higher up in the trees, and the higher they go in the tree, the more ready they are to breed. So,
and the louder they go. You
know, that's right. Yeah. So we're getting close.
Well, I know we've got some callers coming on with questions, but I did want to mention, and we can go into more detail perhaps at another time, but the Culverts Project, I think it's... And, you know, as I've said in the past, I had some friends go through that project, but really loved it. And Jamie, you're the big covert wheel.
I have the pleasure, the honor of coordinating this program. This is probably the highlight of my year. And David's intimately involved, and Scott Craven, who's on the radio opposite months as us, the Wisconsin Coverts Project. So Coverts, I call it
Culverts.
I do too, Larry. I do too. So it's supposed to be pronounced Culverts, and that's a 14th century English term that describes a dense thicket of cover for wildlife. And this term was not a term that I named the program, but it was part of a collaboration with the Ruffed Grouse Society at a national level with a number of state extension services. And really to do something to help private woodland owners in their interest to manage wildlife. And so when we look at the state, so the Culverts program in Wisconsin has been going since 1994. The state of Wisconsin, we have 17 million acres of forested landscape, and about half of that forested land, 57%, is owned by individuals and families. And then if we tie in wildlife is a public trust resource, so nobody owns the wildlife. Everybody owns the wildlife, but a large percentage of it resides on private lands. And so as an extension and wildlife biologists, you know, we have a sense of ownership here to reach out to private woodland owners and help them with managing wildlife. And so the Culverts program, I'll give you the website so you can learn more about it. The website is FWE, F-W-E, that stands for Forest and Wildlife Ecology, the department that David and I are part of. So FWE.wisc, WISC.edu, and then just /Culverts, and it looks like Culverts.
Yeah, Culverts.
Yes, and I promise it's not an undercover operation, so we would like to be more well-known. But this is a three-day program for private woodland owners. It's residential program. We host it at Kemp Natural Resources Station, which is...
the best place to
be. Oh, my gosh, it's such a treat.
I love that place.
It's on beautiful Lake Tomahawk, about 135 acres for the station, and it's just the perfect retreat-like setting to really think about wildlife management. And from there, we bring in about a dozen different professionals, forest and wildlife professionals, to just basically show you, open your eyes to some ideas on how you might manage for wildlife. We are not targeting a specific species of wildlife or a specific succession of forests, whether it's early successional or late growth. The idea is for you to think about what your goals are as a landowner and to do something to actively manage and be a good steward of wildlife.
So they get 3 days, but then there's a great they go away with a great package of materials, and they're asked to kind of spread that information along to others.
And the best part is it's free. We have grant funding coming in from the Sustainable Forestry Initiative, Extension Service, Renewable Resources Extension Act, and other sources that will cover the costs. There is an application to apply, because we are looking for folks who are engaged in their communities, likely to share this information, and are willing to create a written wildlife management plan. And so, again, go to the website. We've got past year's agendas on there. We've got some of our goals, you know, history of the program. So,
again, the website is?
Yep, it's going to be FWE.wisc.edu. /coverts.
Coverts.
Yep.
COVERTS.
You got it.
Well, David and Jamie, it's always a pleasure talking with you. I really appreciate it so much. And I know you're going to be back in a couple of months and we're going to do this all over again. I really appreciate it. And I'm glad as well that Courtney Everett's with me, because otherwise
I'm still here.
otherwise, I'd have to talk 5 minutes all by myself.
I know you
I'd
could do it,
the
Larry.
Sound of your, well, yeah, I have done it in the past.
I've heard.
We're in our drive, and that's why Courtney's here with me. We're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your WPR listening.
Yes, listener supports makes up the largest piece of funding for the programs that you count on. And that's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
And I know a lot of people have already given. If you've already given, thank you so much for that. If not, if you haven't given, there's no time like the present to fund the independent journalism and the meaningful conversations that you can count on from WPR. You choose the amount. Then make a gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And the programs and meaningful conversations that Larry's talking about is also on his show. Today we were talking about Wildlife Wednesday and crow funerals, which you had said that's the first you had ever heard of it. By myself, I'm going to be walking home thinking about that, I think.
it's pretty cool.
It is really neat, yeah. And it's those callers that come in with their real-life stories that is why you are just a staple, Larry, here at WPR. And I know with your retirement coming up, we're all going to miss you, but I don't want to look too far in advance to that because it's spring and it is the last day of our member drive. So you can give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose an amount that works for you. It only takes a few minutes.
And maybe it's $15 a month or maybe it's $20 a month, whatever amount, you know, is right for you. And you can set it up with your credit or debit card, or better yet, I think, right from your bank account. That works really well. It's what we call a sustaining gift, and the beauty of it is you don't have to remember to renew your support every year.
It's so easy, and your support will be consistent as your WPR listening month after month, year after year. So become a sustainer right now. Set up your ongoing gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My name's Kelly Davis, and I live in Whitewater.
I'm Kathy Ross, and I live in Whitewater. I'm originally from North Carolina, and there, public radio was very much part of my life. And so about 6 years ago, I came to southeastern Wisconsin to be closer to my family. And one of the things that my daughter told me before I got here was, Mom, you're going to love WPR. And she was right.
All the credit is mine for introducing my mother to WPR. Probably one of the better things I've done for you, huh, Mom? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I would agree.
Yeah.
Make your contribution today, because listener support makes Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Give now at WPR.org and click Donate.
That's right. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552, asking for your support of the quality programs, the ones that you value here on WPR. And with your gift right now, it really makes a big difference. Could be $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose.
And now's the time to make that donation on this final day of our drive. And Larry, you asked, and I will tell you, I have some number updates for you. We have gotten 42 donations so far out of 200, and this is a special challenge because it unlocks $5,000 in addition to all the lovely donations that we're getting from our statewide listeners. So donate before 6 p.m. today.
That was probably about a donation a minute here.
Yeah. You're very popular, Larry.
Pretty close to it. And, you know, this is a pretty generous group of people we have here. We've been talking about communities of this and that, but at WPR, we have a wonderful community of listeners, people all over the state and outside the state who have made it their pleasure to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio.
And you, Larry, you bring the state together.
Well, I do my best. I try. I try. I'm hoping that we can get to those 200 before the end of the day today. And I bet we do. If you haven't given yet, help us out now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Make your contribution. Courtney and I have had a lot of fun today.
Oh, I had a blast with you, Larry. Thanks for letting me be here.
Thank you. And thank you for listening in. And if you haven't given yet, do it right now. I'm Larry Mueller.